Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
From theblogulator.com, this is Blogulator Radio. We are skewering and fawning over all things television for the Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network. I'm Qualler, and I am all by myself today. It's very sad, but Chris and Jerksica said something about having a baby, and that's some kind of excuse that they can't netcast for you guys, but I guess that's the way it goes. And Bridget is madly writing things for her PhD program. She's nearing the end of the semester and is currently holed up watching movies on LMN. So that's the way we roll. But fortunately, I have a guest with me today, hailing all the way from Indiana. We have Corey Barker on the show. He writes for TVSurveillance.com and is a recent master's graduate in pop culture at Bowling Green University. Corey, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Very good. Congrats on your, I saw that you, did you just finish your master's or?
Yeah, I mean, the semester is over.
Okay.
This is finals week starting tomorrow, but I mean, I don't really have anything except to grade likely mediocre student exams.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds about where Bridget's at, too. She's telling me a lot about, like, all the kind of not great papers she's grading. Although, yeah, they're good papers, too, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a, you know, really sad and depressing state. But there's always a few in there that make you, you know, sort of realize, okay, maybe I'm not making the worst decision of my life by by doing this. But, yeah.
That makes sense. So you are where are you actually based out of in Indiana? Where is Bowling Green?
Well, Bowling Green State University is in Ohio. I'm from Indiana.
Okay, okay.
And I'm actually going back to Indiana. I did my undergrad at Indiana University, and that's where I'm actually going for my PhD. But Bowling Green is like northwest Ohio, so
okay,
just kind of middle of nowhere. There's really nothing going on here.
Gotcha. What are you getting your PhD in?
I'm going back to the department I was in as an undergrad. It's called Communication and Culture. My focus is going to be on television and television audiences probably. I mean, I have no idea what my dissertation will be about yet. But so it's sort of a program similar to the pop culture program here, just looking at media and culture from sort of, you know, a critical cultural studies kind of perspective.
Cool. Well, and one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show is at your blog, TVSurveillance.com, you have a feature that I've been able to write along with you a couple times called Test Pilot. And so you've really been watching a lot of pilots in a lot of different kind of categories of television and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about what that process has been like, and what are your kind of your overall views on pilots as a result?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, as someone who's, you know, still fairly young and kind of grew up in this, you know, quote unquote, like second golden age of television or whatever, when television was supposedly or is supposedly so great, and it is now. It's sort of really hard to go back and look at anything that, you know, came before when I wasn't watching television, when I was, you know, younger or not even alive. Mm-hmm. There's just so much TV on now that if you want to be even sort of just a critic on the side or just for fun or whatever, you have to kind of watch so much of what's on right now that you can't really ever... There's no, you know, TV never stops. You can't really go back. And so what I wanted to do when I created the website is kind of have something or multiple things that allowed me to kind of at least sort of go backwards in some way, not only just to kind of fill in blanks, but to kind of think about where television has been, where it's going, what are the similarities. And I also really wanted to kind of pull in, you know, guest writers, bring on friends, associates, random people, just kind of, you know, create some sort of kind of quasi-network or community that I thought would be sort of helpful. So it's been a really, really fun experience, and I think, I guess, it's crazy that I've been doing it for, like, almost a year and a half now, and worth, you know, like, 42 of them into it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's been a really great experience to go back and watch a lot of things that I hadn't seen before, or even sometimes rewatch things that I have seen before, but maybe with a different kind of perspective in mind or something. And I think that it really has sort of helped me, both as sort of a graduate student and scholar, but also just kind of as a critic, kind of learn more. It spurred me to think about television in different ways, or think about, you know, different shows or networks in different ways, and kind of think about how television has changed. And obviously it's just been fun to kind of bring on guests like you or anyone else to kind of see what other people think and kind of work sort of collaboratively in watching television, because I think television is such sort of – the way that we watch it is often so sort of collaborative or, you know, with other people, and it's – things like Twitter kind of make it this sort of community event. But then when we get to writing about television, it so often then just becomes sort of like one person's interpretation. Yeah. And obviously 1,000 people are writing about Mad Men every week or whatever, so you can pull them together. But kind of putting people together in one space, you know, is a really fun experience, and I think it creates kind of a fun read, hopefully, for other people.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of going off of that, you know, you talked about a little bit about how TV has changed a little bit throughout the years, and but were there any shows where you watched the pilot and thought? Were surprised that the show itself after that wasn't good, or were there any pilots that were bad that ended up turning into good shows?
You know, a lot of people really, really love Sports Night, the Aaron Sorkin show that he did before West Wing. And I vaguely remember when it was on watching a few episodes and enjoying it. And I'm a big West Wing guy, you know, Studio 60 was fine. I understand why people hate it or love it.
Yeah.
I like Sorkin. I'm super excited for his new show. But when I went back and watched the Sports Night pilot, it was kind of all the things that I sort of hate about Sorkin turned up to, you know, 14. And obviously the show went through a lot of changes and was a lot better kind of afterwards, at least from what I remember, and I ended up watching more episodes on Netflix after that. But that was one where the pilot didn't really kind of stand out in the way that I sort of remembered the show standing out.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. I'm going through the list that we've watched so far. I was really surprised, I think, at how much I enjoyed the pilot for Carnival, because I'd heard both good and bad things about it over the years, and obviously it was one of those HBO shows that sort of didn't really get to play out its story because they had that sort of mid-aughts identity crisis where they didn't know what they wanted to be or who they wanted to be,
right?
And I'd heard from everybody about how slow it was and how boring at times and dry, and I was really impressed at how well the pilot sort of established the world, established characters, and established an overarching sort of mystery and mythology without being... I could probably think of three other HBO pilots that I thought were way more boring than that one. So I was really surprised to see that that wasn't, you know, sort of as advertised.
Yeah. One thing about Carnival is Chris and I, my blogging and podcasting partner Chris... I remember we watched Carnival like a year after it came out on DVD and a little bit after it came out, and I remember both of us like collectively kind of thinking like, this is really boring, and the only thing that was notable to us was I think the brother Justin getting the woman to spit out coins, and that was just more like a what the fuck is going on kind of moment.
Yeah.
But then I, you know, like a year later, I gave it a try again and, kind of paid closer attention to it and picked up on some of the things that they were going for, and then ended up watching the entire series. And I mean, I think you're right, is that it does really set up things really well. It kind of has all the elements of what goes on in later on in the series. And in some ways it's kind of an unusual series in general. But it's, I think for what it is, it does the job really well. One thing,
go ahead.
As far as HBO pilots, one kind of recent one that I had kind of mixed feelings toward was the pilot for Veep. Have you seen that yet?
Yes, I actually just watched it yesterday.
Yeah. I think one thing I kind of noticed is it felt a lot more like pilot-y than most HBO pilots go, just because it kind of felt like it was, you know, it had the character, I don't remember his name, who was like kind of a jerk to Anna Chumsley, who at the end of the pilot ended up working in the Veep's yeah. office, and just kind of like elements where it was more about like setting up the office environment than a lot of HBO shows, where they almost kind of jump right into the serialized storyline right away.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think that was just sort of going back to Carnival real quick. I think if Carnival debuted in 2012, I think the response to it would be entirely different, because even if you go back to something like The Sopranos, which was the first thing we ever did for test pilot, like The Sopranos pilot is a fairly self-contained episode of television that's extremely satisfying, obviously sets up a whole lot of things that can be sort of explored later and are, but just as an hour, a little bit plus of television, it works, you know, it feels like a pilot, it feels yeah. like the beginning of a story. But so many of HBO's approach now is just like, well, this is a book and here's the first chapter.
Right.
And either you know what's going on or you don't, and probably you're not going to figure it out until sort of like episode 5 or 6. And so I think when Carnival debuted, audiences weren't entirely familiar with that sort of template. I mean, obviously, you know, people like to say that The Wire pilot, or that The Wire is hard to pick up on until episode 3 or 4, which I don't disagree with, but I mean, now, even relatively speaking, you can understand what's going on in The Wire after episode 1 a hell of a lot easier than you can with Boardwalk, with Game of Thrones, with Treme.
Definitely, yeah.
And so it's weird to think that something that just debuted, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I guess maybe 7 now, geez, you know, it would be received an entirely different way. But yeah, I agree about Veep. I think I don't know if that was just, you know, an approach that HBO asked for, or if that was just, you know, the script that was written, but it did feel very pilot-y, and I don't know, you know, even Girls felt that way, so I don't know if maybe that's what they're trying with their comedy pilots to do, a little bit
yeah.
less sort of sprawling, like, we're just going to push you into 15-foot water and hope that you can sort of swim your way.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, going off of that, is compare that to Game of Thrones, which is very much more like the Carnival model, where and for good reason, because it's using the source material from the book that doesn't exactly lend itself to a pilot in the traditional sense, but that is one thing that's I think you're right about Carnival, is that, you know, even shows like, I think audiences are a lot more used to shows that have such deep mythologies in the way that Carnival does, you know, Lost and every other iteration of that that's gone on since then. I think if it debuted today, I think HBO would probably realize that it doesn't have to be a Sopranos style hit to be successful.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the interesting thing, even just in the last 7 or 8 years, the way that they debut shows and the way that they get them out there is, you know, like you said, HBO didn't really know what they were doing. And I think a lot of other cable networks and even broadcast networks were kind of feeling their way around what's going on now, where there's just, you know, there's so much so much different programming and so many different shows that are on just with cable and internet, you know, yeah. video on demand, things like that. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that I've sort of realized with doing this feature is that the sort of the early to mid 2000s was sort of a really weird time for television where there had been these sort of opening, you know, salvos of sort of quote unquote quality like The Sopranos or, you know, things like that. And it seemed like that television was sort of shifting one way, but not everybody was sort of ready for it on an audience side or an industrial side. And even from a creative side, it seemed like nobody was really sure kind of what shows were going to be, how they could appeal to different audiences. And I think for better, for worse, kind of where we are now, where we kind of know now, okay, these are the kind of shows that work on broadcast networks. These are right. the kind of shows that work on FX. These are the kind of shows that work on HBO. I think that sort of tiered system that sort of just kind of figured itself out after all that confusion for 5 or 6 or even 7 years is really good for television. I mean, it stratifies things really obviously where, you know, people are never really going to respect something on CBS. You yeah. know, I mean, even now with The Good Wife, like it still took a while for people, you know, when I try to tell people about The Good Wife, they're just like, the lawyer show with the woman from ER, like, yeah. you know, it doesn't.
It's on CBS. I mean, how could yeah. it be good? You're right. Yeah.
So I think that that sort of creates, you know, an unfair sort of stratification of what's good and what's bad. But it also, we sort of know what to expect and audiences know what to expect when we go into new HBO shows or when we go into new FX shows or when we go into new CBS shows. And it's weird that only 5 or 6 years ago, like, we just had no idea. And we were, you know, networks and audiences were just kind of like, give us everything at once and we'll figure it out. And then, like, all those shows that if they had they debuted now could either be successful on a creative or even sort of financial way, you know, a lot of them got canceled in, you yeah. know, a season or less.
Right. Right, exactly. What about kind of going through the list of your shows, what was like probably what pilots were just really good pilots and which pilots were just really terrible?
Okay, so let me see which one I've watched that's probably okay. The worst one is definitely the Knight Rider reboot. I mean, that was I actually watched that live and it was painful going back. I mean, that
I don't even remember when I don't, that was just a few years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was I think it was early 08. Yeah, it okay. was like January, February of 08.
I feel like you can't have Knight Rider without David Hasselhoff. So like,
he comes
point?
In at the end, though.
Oh, he does he?
Because he's the guy's dad.
Interesting.
But it's honestly, it was a 2-hour like movie that was basically a commercial for Ford, and they did this weird, they did obvious product placement, but then it was also like a what's known as a content wrap, where every commercial break was just like the main actor guy who is a terrible actor, like driving around in the new kit, and like every commercial was just like just a bit for Ford. I mean, it was really one of the most painful experiences.
Wow.
yeah. And I mean, obviously, we also not to just continuously knock on NBC, but it's yeah. really easy.
Right. Exactly.
We also did the marriage ref and that theme when we talked about NBC's downfall, and obviously that was a miserable experience. as far as best, I mean, obviously the Sopranos pilot's really strong. The X-Files pilot's really strong. I'm trying to find one that I think surprised me a little bit. Uh-huh. You know, I was pleasantly surprised by China Beach, which I had sort of fallen through the cracks because it's not available on DVD.
Yeah.
And it's really, I mean, you know, obviously I torrented it. That's how I watched the episode.
Right, right.
I didn't have like a VHS copy from 1989.
Right.
But it took me literally like days to find a torrented copy. Like it was that difficult to even find a stream of an episode because there's no distribution for it. So I didn't really know what to expect. If only because there's just not a whole lot of, you know,
yeah.
information about the show.
Right.
I really liked that one. And I think, you know, we did at the beginning of this year, we did a theme week on Joss Whedon, which is sort of a weird blank spot for me. Like, I don't have a problem with Joss Whedon. I just, most of those shows aired, you know, at a time when I was still pretty young and wasn't super into television. And
yeah,
now I've sort of, it's, you know, again, that's one of those things, like the fact that I haven't caught up with Buffy is a time thing, not a, but you know, so I had seen the Buffy pilot before, but I was pleasantly surprised at how much I liked the Firefly pilot, just because I kind of over the years got, I almost didn't want to watch it because I got tired of people telling me how much of an asshole I was for not having watched it.
Yeah.
But I mean, after watching it, I was like, okay, I get this now. I understand why people still won't shut up about it. So.
Right. Yeah, I think that's actually, you know, I'm kind of on the same boat with you on Joss Whedon. I really haven't watched any of his shows, even though I have kind of a respect for his work and kind of understand what he's going for. But that's, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I know, I'll catch up at some point. I'll watch it. It's like,
well, I've seen all of Dollhouse, and really, I think like Dollhouse more than most people. So I know that if I go back, I'm in. It's not, you know, it's just,
yeah,
I haven't been able to find the time, and I wish I could, but there are even other things that I would prefer, you know, as I've sort of kind of gone along with this process as a scholar or critic or whatever, I've been more and more interested in older television. And, you know, at this point, Buffy is something that I would love to watch, but it's almost too current. And there are other things from that era that I still haven't seen, like The Sopranos or The Shield, that frankly are just more important to me. So it's just one day, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You have, The Shield is one I haven't watched either. I watched The Sopranos kind of when it was on, and you know, like watched the finale a few days after it aired. But then I rewatched the whole series with my wife / co-blogger Bridget, and you know, it's amazing how easy it is to tear through that entire series in like a couple months.
Yeah, I'm strongly considering doing that. I often, you know, pull up like Amazon, or like when I'm at Best Buy, I often almost just buy the whole box set.
Yeah,
and realize that it would be not only a terrible financial decision, but also a terrible time management decision.
Right. Yeah. One pilot that I'm thinking of is Vampire Diaries, in that it's a really, really mediocre pilot and leads to a lot of like pretty mediocre to terrible first few episodes before it kind of finds its footing later on in the season. Are there any other shows on your list that do anything like that, or
You mean ones that we've watched so far or just in general?
I guess either. Okay. Either one. Yeah,
I mean, I know, again, there are some things, like I haven't seen all of Angel. I've only seen the first season, but I think the Angel pilot's pretty mediocre. And I know that show kind of changes sort of as it moves on. I'm trying to think what else. Obviously, something like Sports Night. I think a lot of – it's interesting that certain – it seems more prevalent today that maybe – I mean, that's just sort of because I'm – watching more television today, but it seems like a lot of the pilots that I've went back and watched in for this feature, for just whatever, like the pilots are a little bit stronger. And I don't know if that's just a sign of the times, but it seems like, you know, contemporary television, there's sort of a lot of, okay, well, here's the pilot, but this isn't really going to be the show.
Right.
And I know, you know, something like Parks and Rec is probably the most fantastic example, where the pilot is like, I can't even do it. Like, I watched that pilot and just wanted to like punch myself in the face repeatedly.
Yeah.
And just the fact that it is now one of the two or three best shows on television, period, is, you know, telling.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there was something else that I was going to write off the top of my head that I can't think of. Do you have any in mind while I try to remember what I was going to say?
Well, yeah, I think Parks and Rec is a perfect example of that too, where it's a show where it's a comedy and it's more about like setting up the characters, but you know, obviously they found that what they set up wasn't what they wanted to do in the show, kind of similar to Cougar Town too, where it was one premise and then they kind of threw the premise out the window when they realized that that wasn't going to work long term. I kind of feel like that's something that is easier to do with a comedy, because you know, most comedies are essentially throw some people together and have them hang out for a while, and whereas with a drama you have to follow a lot more kind of plot lines, you know, something that's not like a case of the week show like CSI that you just covered.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things is that that's become, I think, even more prevalent with comedies over time. I think there's been a lot of discussion from me and a lot of other like critics and scholars that people have been talking about comedies a lot lately and how it takes a while for comedies to figure themselves out. Like the first season of a comedy is never the best season. It's often the worst, unless, you know, you're The Office and you just never die. And then you are, you know, then whatever season, what is this, the eighth season, then your eighth season is the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think, you know, so the Parks and Rec is a great example of that. Even, you know, the U.S. Office is a great example of that. You know, Cougar Town is a fantastic example. Happy Endings is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Raising Hope, the pilot, is pretty terrible.
Uh-huh.
And it took a while to kind of get there. New Girl had a decent pilot, but there were a couple episodes after that were pretty bad.
Yeah.
So I think with comedies, you're right. It just takes so long. You know, I mean, some better than other, quicker than others, but it takes a long time to sort of figure out who you are, not only kind of who the characters are, but who the actors are that are playing them. I've heard a lot of people, you know, creative types or showrunners or whatever, say that, you know, they wrote the character, you know, you wrote a script about a show, you know, and it's been sitting in your drawer for 5 years and you pictured these characters and then you get an actor to play them and you realize that that character is not that person anymore because of the actor who's playing them, and that changes sort of dramatically.
Right.
So I think that that's sort of something that's really, really apparent with comedy. Drama, it's not, and I don't know why, and I'm not sure if that's just kind of the differences between the form, but dramas kind of seem to come more fully formed.
Yeah.
So where something like The Vampire Diaries stands out a lot because its pilot and first three or four episodes are so terrible.
Right.
It's just
like it's basically starts as a Twilight.
Oh yeah.
Like a worse Twilight and then totally takes off in a different direction pretty soon after that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a worse Twilight with somehow even more fog. Like so much fog in that
so
pilot.
Much.
But yeah, you know, even something like, and it was weird that they sort of did the same thing with The Secret Circle, which is sort of vampire, like it's not even, it's the homeless man's Vampire Diaries, it's not the poor man's. But, you know, obviously Kevin Williamson was sort of, he's the EP on that show, and he kind of positioned himself, he kind of smartly positioned the show from the beginning, saying, well, just like with The Vampire Diaries, like we're starting with this book, you know, which is basically sort of couching the fact that the books themselves are probably terrible. And so, you know, they're trying to appeal to that teen and tween audience that likes those terrible books, but then turn it into like a real decent show. And with Secret Circle, they still really don't have a clue sort of, I think they figured out kind of what the show they could make is, but that's not really a good show. And I think part of it is the actors and just it's, you know, a show about witches is just not as exciting as a show about vampires and werewolves. Just not. You can do your best, but it's just witches chanting. You know, if they decided that they were going to build an entire show around Bonnie, like everybody who watched The Vampire Diaries would just say, you know, fuck you. So.
Yeah, exactly. And going off of that, I think having the actors in place is so critical because I don't think The Vampire Diaries would be as successful as it was without Ian Somerhalder as Damon. I mean, he definitely carried the load in the early episodes. And then, as the show went on, it, you know, plot twists and what have you ended up that a lot of the rest of the cast kind of bounced things off of, Damon, you know, Ian Somerhalder's character. and ended up kind of playing off of him. And then they, as a result, became more interesting characters because they were kind of bouncing things off of him. And, you know, I look at like a character like Catherine, who's also played by the same actress who plays Elena, who in the early episodes, she's kind of a liability on the show. She's kind of boring. Yeah. And then as the show goes on, she gets to play these dual roles, and also in her second role, basically acts like a female Damon. And it's just like, they realize like more Damon is good. So,
yeah. And I think they also, in a lot of ways, like the casting director for that show really kind of knocked it out of the park. I mean, I think they were really trying to wiggle around what is not great source material, but obviously, you know, the people acting, they're not turning in Emmy-worthy performances. It's not, you know, they can't hold a candle to, you know, Aaron Paul or something like
that.
Right,
exactly.
But I think everybody on that show really knows their character, and I think that's important. And I think they also, the show treats everybody's emotions and feelings with a lot of care, despite sort of all the crazy things and the sometimes forced plot machinations that require people to do things that aren't necessarily logical. They often treat everybody's feelings really sort of really strongly. So I think even, you know, all the way down, I mean, I think obviously Somerhalder is sort of the standout performer, but I think Nina Dobrev is fantastic. I think Paul Wesley's been awesome this year.
Yeah.
Mostly because they've given him, you know, he doesn't just have to sort of, you know, brood silently. Like he's gotten to do things.
Right.
You know, I think Candace Akola is fantastic.
Yeah,
as Caroline. And even this year, you know, Zach Roaring's been really good as Matt, and Matt had nothing to do for 2 years, and all of a sudden, like, Matt's like my favorite character on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a show where not only did they sort of figure it out after the pilot, but they also realized again, like, the importance of casting and the importance of having good performers, because I think that's something that kind of bothers me about the Secret Circle. Not that any of them are bad, but they just don't, I always describe it as like they're sort of playing, it's almost like they're dressing up, they're like the little siblings of all the people on the Vampire Diaries and they're like dressing up pretending to be them,
right?
And it just doesn't work, because you don't like the sort of artifice of a world with these sort of supernatural beings, and yet they're all super attractive and having sex with each other all the time. And even on, that's sort of something on too, like on Vampire Diaries, you don't like, nobody like, it's just like having sex all the, you know, it's not really a super sexual show.
Right.
In the Secret Circle, it seems like they've tried to overcompensate where they sort of lack in a narrative or character base. It's just like, well, now the girls are going to take their clothes off.
Right. Know? Right. And they can only go so far because they're on CW. So
yeah.
It's not like a True Blood where it's like,
yeah,
they really don't have, like on True Blood, they don't have anything to do plot wise. So might as well get naked.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Secret Circle is the show that everybody assumes Vampire Diaries is in terms of quality and what sort of happened. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah.
The people who don't watch Vampire Diaries assume that it's just sort of a weekly Twilight with not really good acting or good writing or anything like that. That's what the Secret Circle is. That's
interesting. Yeah, I've yet to watch Secret Circle, but I don't think I'll be spending much time there. So.
Yeah, you're not missing anything.
Going off of Kevin Williamson, I think one other show with a strong pilot for what it is Dawson's Creek. And that's one that I've watched a few times with Bridget. And I feel like it's a show where the characters come out of the box kind of what they are right away. But as the show goes on, I've ended up watching, I'm almost through the final season now, rewatching it with Bridget. Like in the second season, it's kind of like they run out of ideas and just kind of go crazy. And it's probably it's one of the worst seasons of Dawson's Creek is the second season, where Kevin Williamson was still the executive producer. And then as the show went on, it kind of ended up kind of calming down and just being more like pleasant colors and pleasant, you know, situations. And not that it's like an award-winning show or even a lot of times it was a bad show and a good show all kind of
at the same time.
Yeah. But it's one where it's like it started with a pilot that went one way, and you know, you have like Joey, who's by the end of the second season is a completely different character from what she is in the pilot.
Yeah.
So one other show that I was thinking about that where it comes out just fully formed though is Cheers, and that's, you know, a show where every character is just like pitch perfect, and you know, the first season is just a classic season. And I think on paper, when I think about, if somebody told me it was a show where the characters, where it's a group of people who hang out with each other and they're, you know, situations that are funny, but as the show evolves, it kind of becomes more like each character is more of a one-note character. I think that's one thing about Cheers, where it seems like, you know, by the eighth or ninth season, Cliff goes from being kind of a more well-rounded character to being a reliable joke factory. But I think it works so well still, even in those later episodes, because it's just really funny. And you just, like, know the characters really well, and it's just a really well-put-together show. But, I mean, that's one show where it just came out. And
yeah, and I spent the summer actually watching the first season, writing about the first season of Cheers last summer.
Yeah.
And I sort of had the same exact reaction that you just kind of sort of described. I mean, I've heard great things about Cheers, but it's one of those things that, again, you know, it started like 7 years before I was even alive. So I didn't know what to expect, but I sort of went into it expecting, well, comedy pilots aren't always the best. And then the first, like Cheers, there are few sort of even stumbles in that first season. I mean, I think there, you know, there are episodes that are better than others, and there are jokes that are better than others, but there's no sort of feeling out period that you see so often in comedy. And I think that that's a testament to the creative staff on Cheers, and also the performers. I think, you know, everybody's awesome in the first season of Cheers. And I think that, you know, that's why it's such a respected show that people still sort of look at as this kind of pillar of, you know, a certain kind of television sitcom that, you know, we sort of look down upon the multi-camera sitcom now, but when done really well, like it was, you know, you see, if you watch Cheers in 2012, you understand why the multi-camera format state was so kind of, you know, entrenched in contemporary or in U.S. television.
It's almost like a mini play, like every week, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it does go on, and it's just a really well written, well directed, just all the way around show. One last thing is the show that you and I most recently talked about is NYPD Blue, and I think that that's a show that comes out of the box really strong. Although when I think about the pilot and compare it to the episodes that come after it in the first season, there are definitely like elements of the pilot that feel, you know, again, for lack of a better word, pilot-y, where there are scenes that are there to kind of tantalize a viewer who's just coming into the show, or kind of shock a viewer, that today come off as kind of hilarious because of how controversial it was when it came out. Thinking of the scene where David Caruso and Amy Brenneman have sex, and it's just like kind of like a Lifetime movie type scene.
It's very cheesy.
Yeah, but then the rest of the show is just so, the rest of the episode and then the episodes that follow it are just so kind of ahead of their time in a lot of ways. It still kind of follows the elements of like a Law and Order type of show where there are a lot of the episodes are very self-contained, but that pilot has all of the elements that the show had, but just kind of amped up a little bit.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenge that I've had doing this feature is sort of going back and watching these things and trying not to let sort of my, you know, my place as someone from 2012, like sort of recontextualize everything. Obviously that's sort of the point, is to sort of, okay, well, let's look at something and see how we should view it in 2012. But at the same time, there are certain things like that sex scene from the NYPD Blue Pilot that in 1994 it was like, holy shit. And
right.
To me, like, as, you know, again, somebody in 2012 who, you know, has grown up watching shows on HBO or whatever, I'm just like, you know, really? Like, that's what we're worked up about? And not only that, like, just the music and, you know, the angles and just the way it was edited together, it's sort of laughable, but that those things, you know, you have to remember the time and the context. And I think that that's been one of, if not the sort of biggest challenge with doing something like this, is that you have to look at a pilot and value it for what it is and, you know, and how it looks in 2012. But you also have to think about, okay, you know, what did this mean or what did it represent in 1994 or 1979 or whatever? And I think that's what makes this feature so fun for me. And I think hopefully sort of interesting for other people to read, is that, you know, we're not only trying to put a spin on something for people who didn't watch, but also sort of remind people who did watch kind of what was there, and maybe if they've forgotten it because of, you know, time changing or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that's all I have, Corey. So thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, your website is tvsurveillance.com. You can follow Corey at Corey Barker on Twitter. Yep. Anything else that you have going on, Corey?
No, that's pretty much it. Follow me on Twitter for any sort of updates. Got a few sort of quasi-secret things in the works that will be coming out soon that are sort of related to television history and pilots and stuff like that. So
I look forward to
having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And one last thing for Blogulator Radio listeners is that Blogulator Radio is brought to you by Netflix. You can go to bit.ly/blogflix and try a 2-week trial. And for free after that, it's $8 a month. And doing so allows you to also support independent netcasting like our show. And you can check out a lot of the pilots that we talked about here today on Netflix and all kinds of other things. So again, this is Qualler on Blogulator Radio, and by myself, I will say that our opinions are valid.